Give me five.
Hey, Tom. Bradwin and Silver Newbridge. First time, long time.
Bradwin?
Bradwin, yes.
Bradwin. How are you, Bradwin?
I'm good. What's shaking in Weirdo Wood?
Not a whole lot. Just kind of enjoying being here in Los Angeles, and it's nice. I like it. Bradwin. What's that?
It's a whole different vibe, right?
It is a whole different vibe. Yeah, yeah. I enjoy it. Bradwin.
Bradwin. Bradwin.
Bradwin. Okay.
No. B-R-A-D, like Brad, like Brad Whitford of, kind of the unsung axman in Aerosmith.
Mm-hmm. You think so? You think people don't talk about him as much as Joe Perry?
Well, here's a tidbit. I don't know if you knew this, but amongst the Aerosmith, camp.
Yeah.
Brad Whitford, Tom Hamilton, and Joey Kramer are known within the organization as the L.I.T.
The L.I.T. What does that stand for?
The Less Interesting Three. This is true.
So people, when you say people in the Aerosmith camp, who are you talking about?
I'm talking about the band and management.
That they just refer to three of the five members of Aerosmith as the Less Interesting Three.
They do. Someone on your staff can Google that. I think it's out there.
The only thing I could think of when you said in the Aerosmith camp, all I could think of is what if Aerosmith opened a camp? Like Camp Aerosmith.
I'm pretty into it. I think those guys were nature dudes from New Hampshire at the beginning.
They were nature dudes.
Oh yeah, have you not read the oral history? Oh my goodness, so much filth in there.
I didn't read the oral history of Aerosmith, but they would walk around the woods and stuff.
Well, they're from New Hampshire, Steven Tyler and Joe Perry. I think that's where they met up in New Hampshire at a camp. So they're nature guys. So I don't think it's out of their realm of expertise. I mean, sure they've suffered insane cocaine damage, but that never kept anyone from being a counselor, as far as I know.
But you could picture them doing like games like tug of war would be like draw the line. You draw the line, then you do the tug of war, right?
I don't get the draw the line part.
Okay, well, it's a one of the. Never mind. Skip it.
I have gaping holes. Like I know about the LIT, but I don't know any song titles.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. You got some inside information on how the business goes down, but you didn't know one of their hits. Whatever. That's fine.
Very weird stuff. Hey, speaking of Hollywood.
Yeah, what's that, Bradwin?
Well, I'm sure you were there, but I didn't get to watch the Golden Globes because I had to help my pastor bury something. But I heard Ricky Gervais killed.
He is he's a tough customer. You know what I mean?
Loaded. Yeah.
Yeah. He goes all out.
Goes right for the juggler. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you can confirm this. I don't know if it's true or not, but is he an atheist? Because I think I heard him say it only one time.
I am not entirely sure. I like his comedy because he keeps it pure and keeps business like that out of it.
Very pure. And when he laughs at something he says, it's never fake.
It's never a fake, shrill, overpowering,
no,
punishing laugh that interrupts everyone's concentration and celebrates his own success only in comparison to people who have less than him. It's none of that.
It's
warm.
It's very warm. And you know who would know whether or not this is true or not? It is Andy Kindler, who I think runs a Ricky Gervais news group.
He does. He runs the fun club.
Fun Club. Okay, I'm gonna write Fun Club.
Ricky Gervais's Fun Club. He's the president of that.
Right.
And he's pretty tight with Ricky. Also, I like that he just calls himself Ricky.
It's just Ricky now, like Cher.
It's just just Ricky. It's like certain people, you just know them by the first name, Jack, right?
Exactly, yeah, Jack Black.
But Nicholson, actually, so I thought, but, okay. Or like Arnold.
Arnold from Happy Days.
Schwarzenegger.
Schwarzenegger, yes. Yeah. That was my second. Hey, speaking of the film world.
Yeah.
I know you used to be in the entertainment industry, but maybe you've still got some contacts.
Okay, Can you
find out if the original title of, you know, of this Roger Ailes movie Bombshell was hitting those hard T's?
Yeah, hitting those hard. That's because, like, I don't know, this movie,
right?
Bombshell, which is the one which has Margot Robbie and Nicole Kidman and Charlize Theron. When she always really hits the T's hard in that.
It's insane.
Yeah, when she's because she's playing Megyn Kelly.
Right, right. And I'll be honest, I don't. Oh my God, what's going on out there?
What? What's that? Rodwin?
I'm here. It sounds like there's a third party on the line.
Is there a third party on the line?
Very interesting sounding.
I can't hear anything.
Now it's gone.
Is there anything on New Jersey? I'm trying to talk to a caller, for goodness sake.
I feel good now. It's gone. Whatever it was, it sounded like a child playing on streets of Jersey City or something.
Broadwin, I apologize.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. I've got all night.
Okay.
And I took all night to listen to me.
Because, all right. Well,
we were talking about the hard T's, and I haven't given enough attention to Megyn Kelly, so I don't know if that's a true portrayal of her voice. I assume it is, because Charlize Theron is a great, great actress. But it was just very interesting to me that she, you know, that the heavy T, and it got me thinking of something.
I love
when you do Joe Namath.
Oh, thank you, Broadwin. Thank you.
The greatest thing.
I appreciate it. Thank you, my friend.
Because it's a similar vibe.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you would do a little riffage with me where you are Joe Namath and I'm interviewing you. I'm Megyn Kelly and it's the Megyn Kelly show and I'm interviewing Joe Namath. Can we do that, please? Please?
Sure. Let's do a little bit of it.
All right. Okay. And 5, 4, 3, 2. They never say the one on TV.
No, they don't. I guess because it creates a certain amount of space.
Exactly. I think it's for what they call editing. Okay, so here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2. Today on the Megyn Kelly Show, we have football great Joe Namath. Joe, we know you as a great quarterback, but what people might not know is that you have one of the country's largest comic book collections. Joe, what is your favorite comic book?
Well, Megyn, thank you for that, amazing question. I really enjoy when I get any opportunity to talk all about my comic book collection. Probably my most proudest comic book is Daredevil number 2 I have. It's in mint minus condition, and I really like to look at the pages of Daredevil number 2 often when I'm laying around in my home.
I love when people say often, when they hit the T in often.
Mm-hmm. What would be a good one would be is Joe Namath talking to Jimmy Hoffa from The Irishman.
Okay. I've only seen 3 hours of this, so I can't really do
it. Well, you didn't get in 2 more hours, Jimmy Hoffa shows up in the movie. It's going to be exciting because right now you're probably saying to yourself, what is this movie about with Robert De Niro looking like he's the love child of Alec Baldwin and Robin Williams? And with these insane blue eyes that make it look like he's Bill Bixby on the Hulk.
That's exactly it. Oh my
which
God.
Which I do have to credit, Ronnie, our friend Ronnie for saying that line, but I'm sorry, Ronnie, I'm not stealing your stuff.
That's dead on. Hey, speaking of television.
Yeah.
I heard this rumor between sets at the gym the other day that you were going to be the 5th Impractical Joker for this next season, but you tested so poorly because people thought you were an animal.
Well, that's very insulting. That's hurtful. So people were watching and they thought it was like the 4 Impractical Jokers and an animal.
Yes, but I gotta say, in some cases, that's just down to choice of clothing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That I was wearing stuff that made me look like some sort of, do you even know what animal they thought I was? Did people at the gym?
Well, the guy I was talking to, the actual word he used was gorilla.
A gorilla, okay.
A gorilla, yeah.
Sure. No. Well, I'm not a gorilla or gorilla, but sure. Okay. Well, that's still hurtful. All I can say on that matter is, I like to try different things out in my career, and I'm blessed by the opportunities, and sometimes they don't all entirely work out, and I appreciate the tenderloins. And Impractical Jokers for the opportunities.
Hey, there's always next season. That's what I say, you know. And let's have some fun, okay? I feel like I brought you down, and that was
a little bit.
Nor my intention. I'm sorry.
A little bit.
Okay, let's bring the vibe up. Okay, my buddies and I play this really fun game, and I'd love to do a round with you if you've got just a few minutes to do it.
Sure. What is the game?
Well, the game is called What Would Have Happened If? And it's kind of like that board game called What If? But there's just 2 more words in the title of this game.
Okay.
Okay. So basically how it works is you just pick a person or an event, and you have 2 minutes to paint a picture of what you think would have happened if some crucial part of that early story didn't occur.
Okay.
So I'll start and I'll do one first, okay?
Okay.
All right, let me just think of
something. Show me how it's done.
Okay, I'll think of a good one. Hang on. Got it. Okay, all right. What would have happened if Fonzie from Happy Days never met the Cunninghams?
What would have happened if Fonzie, the character from Happy Days, never crossed paths with the Cunningham family, who kind of became a surrogate family to him?
Exactly. They as far as I remember, they really steered him off the bad path and kept him on the right path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, here's what I think would have happened. I think Fonzie would have become more bitter and disappointed as his life went on, because he knew he wasn't on the same playing field intellectually as most of the young people he was coming into contact with. I mean, let's face it, he had little education, no real prospects other than a lifetime as a mechanic in a tertiary city known for its production of bland alcohol and even blander alcoholics. I think the ensuing depression compounded with a lack of sense of purpose would eventually drive Fonzie to take more and more chances with negative, reckless behavior. You know, whether it's dangerous driving, fighting, petty thievery. And, you know, on a relationship business, level, you know, that F and Chuck behavior on display when we first meet Fonzie on the Happy Days show, you know, it already kind of reveals him as a chauvinist at best, but an emotionally abusive, philandering creep is probably a more apt description of him. And I think it would only be a matter of time before Fonzie took advantage of and basically knocked up at least two vulnerable teenage girls who are already drawn to erratic narcissist father figures. I mean, imagine Fonzie as a parent. Can you? I mean, it's crazy. There's really no reference to him having a problem with drugs or anything. But I think we all know it would only be a matter of time before he was drinking like a pint of hooch at breakfast just to face another day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and between the humiliation of being unable to provide for his growing and unwanted family and his always simmering rage, you and I both know that Fonzie would eventually find himself scoring H in East Milwaukee with money he stole from his auto shop boss.
Uh-huh.
But that's not where it ends, Tom. Nope.
Okay, so it doesn't end with Fonzie becoming doing hard drugs.
No, oh no, no, no. Tom, pretty soon the night prowls start.
Okay, what are the night prowls?
Well, at first it's really...
It's dry.
Well, it's emotional. No, it's dry, but it's also emotional because it's a beloved American type. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, it just starts out as Peeping Tom stuff.
Okay.
But soon that's not enough. You know, he needs to enter the house.
It's not enough for him to get his jollies staring in a window.
No, oh no, no, no. At first it is.
But okay.
But he needs to go inside and he needs to let the owners know that he's been there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sickness really takes hold.
What year do you think we're talking about now?
We're talking first season.
So this is like 50s. He's this guy in the 50s.
I think we're talking about like 57.
Okay. Wow.
At this point, it's not just enough to go in the houses. He needs to kill.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to let you know about our latest episode of Office Hours Live.
Office Hours is great fun.
With the great John Early and Theda Hamill.
Very handsome.
Thank you. They're here to talk about their new movie, Stress Positions. And we just had a wonderful time. There was a lot of laughter and joy. Don't believe me? Well, listen for yourself on the podcast app of your choice. You're not going to want to miss a second. That's at Office Hours Live. At the podcast app of your choice.
Bum, 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 bum.
I love Vic and Doug, and I love drinking my wine.
Okay.
And he finds victims nobody will miss. Transients. Drifters. People of the evening. I mean, essentially, this guy's Dahmer 40 years before Dahmer in the same city.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy, right?
It is.
And his reign of terror on Milwaukee, it's horrific, and it lasts years, and he becomes known as the Beer City Butcher, the Blood Brewer, the Windbreaker Killer. Remember that? He wore a windbreaker in that first season.
He did wear a windbreaker because the network didn't want him wearing a leather jacket because they made him look like a hoodlum.
Right? And it's like... That's even less cool than a high school glee club letter jacket, if you ask me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just not cool. It isn't cool. And here's the thing nobody ever discusses about Fonzie. He wasn't a big guy.
No, he's probably like 5'6", 5'5", right?
Yeah, exactly. And I really do think that Richie Potsie and maybe even Ralph individually would have been able to overpower him given the right circumstances.
Sure. Just if they had the confidence.
Yeah. Or just like one crucial step ahead of him in a fight, you know, mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, if that happened, once word of Fonzie getting his ass kicked by a nerd made it to the kids down at Arnold's,
mm-hmm.
huge death blow to Fonzie's self-esteem. And you know what that means?
What's that mean?
Hello, Cheese State Strangler.
I don't know what that means.
No, that's Fonzie. That's another nickname that
he becomes the Cheese Steak Strangler.
Cheese State, STATE.
Oh, okay, that's what threw me. Okay, he's the Cheese State Strangler.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we'll cut to the end here. In a cruel twist, Fonzie ends up sentenced to the electric chair for the carjacking and bludgeoning of a local hardware store owner who was just on his way home from work in the summer of 1962.
Oh, I see this. I see where this is going.
One Howard Cunningham of 565 Clinton Drive.
Yeah. So it's
never find the head.
They never found his head.
They never find the head.
And then I guess that would mess things up that Richie would not become a journalist.
Oh, he would have become like a, he would have been an institution. He would have been so messed up. Oh my God. Okay. Now you do one. Okay.
Okay. Well, that's a little joyous, but
it's just a fun game.
Yeah. No, it is a fun game. I guess I could do one. What if, okay, here's a popular one I'll do, but I'll do it in my own style. What if in 1970, the Beatles didn't break up?
Oh.
Like, what if they were all fighting and then, say, someone got them to the table to have another meeting and to be like, we can figure this out, right?
Right, okay.
And instead of blowing the whole thing up, they decide to just give it some space and they'll pull together. So I guess I would think that Abbey Road would come out and then Let It Be comes out. And right. then maybe they all take a breather for a year, start doing different music for a year with other people, right? Each right. one puts out, like John Lennon puts out the Plastic Ono album and Paul McCartney puts out his first solo album. George Harrison puts out All Things Must Pass, which then puts him like in the lead because so when they start to reform, George Harrison's got a different attitude now.
My God.
Like he's just like, hey, I'm not just taking a back seat here anymore. It's not just the two of you guys and me and Ringo. It's not like the two winners and the two losers. There's only one loser in the band now, Ringo.
So he hasn't had any of his solo hits yet during this hiatus.
George.
Ringo.
No, Ringo has not, because he would put out the same dumb albums he put out, the country album and the album of standards, Sentimental Journey. And it's always funny when these people say, like, I recorded it for my mother. It's like, well, you can do other things for your mother too. The rest of us don't have to buy the thing for your mother. Yeah, you know, you could
buy your
mother a boat or something.
Yeah.
I did it as a tribute to my mother. It's like, okay, great. Deck. What's that?
Sand the back deck.
Yeah, sand the back deck in tribute to your mother.
Yeah.
So they come back together, say around like 72.
Mm-hmm.
And George is now just like, I'm an equal here in the thing. Ringo, that means he doesn't have any of those hits, any of the like Photograph and all those things really don't happen for him.
Right.
So he gets kind of embittered. Then the 70s start rolling along. The Beatles put another album out in like 72, 73, say.
What's it called? Please have a name for it.
What would be, let's see, let's like, Lipstick Daydreams.
Oh, nice. I was going to say Butterscotch something, but that's good.
No, maybe I like what you just said. What if it's called, what are like four different candies that they could each think that they're the candies? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
and it's like the sleeve is a candy box.
Yes. And it's four slots in the candy box. Like you can lift this. It'd be a really expensive package because it's like the Beatles are back with their new album, Butterscotch. I don't want to do fudge. Butter.
A word that doesn't go with candy, like butterscotch concrete.
So each of them, they're not like concrete. So I thought like George would say, like, I'm butterscotch. And like, pick a flavor that they would they'd all be, right?
I got it, yeah.
So what candy flavor would Ringo be in a chocolate assortment? Now, what if it's like caramel, butterscotch, nougat?
Well, the English are always talking about marzipan, yeah. So it's got that, right?
So what if it's marzipan, butterscotch, like John is marzipan.
Perfect.
John is marzipan, George is butterscotch, Paul is nougat, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Ringo is just like cream filling. Like he's the one that no one wants, like when you get those boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's
terrible.
What's that?
I hate the jelly. Do you like the jelly?
No, he should just be the jelly then. And the jelly, right?
Yeah.
So it comes out, they put an album out, they're huge again. All the stuff that would end up on like Band on the Run and Imagine starts going on like Beatles albums. So it's like, holy moly, these guys are putting together some great albums now.
Right.
But then what rolls in? Punk.
Wait, oh my God, yeah.
And you could picture John. Couldn't you picture the Damned trying to get John Lennon to produce that first album?
Oh yeah, I think he'd be into punk, don't you?
I think he'd be into punk but would be really bad at it.
Yeah. Well, like, I guess he was live during punk, but I don't remember him doing anything.
No, he would miss out. He would think he understood punk.
Right.
But would not be good. Would clearly not understand it.
Would he still be holding his guitar too high?
I think he would get rid of that hollow body guitar, yeah. And he'd switch right. To like what's a punk guitar?
Well, like a Maserati, like Johnny Ramone played. Maybe?
Sure, like he would start hanging out with. Because if he came to New York at that point, he would maybe if he was more actively engaged in music still and didn't like pull away, he would be more like on the punk scene.
Tonight at Max's. John Lennon and the Razor Blades.
Yeah. Tonight at Max's, Suicide, the bill would be, what if he started a punk band called Johnny Punk? Johnny Punk and the, what would it be, the Razor Blades?
What if it was John Lennon?
John Lennon and the Mohawks.
What if that was it?
Yeah. And then, like, when the Beatles come back to do their next album, he's punk on it.
He's still punk.
And then Ringo would be full-on disco at that point.
Also has the shag. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
I want to do a disco song on the new record. It's called Disco Drummer. They call me Disco Drummer, right? I like to dance around. And then they would go into the 80s. They're like new wave. Then suddenly they're like a new wave would enter the picture. And you picture Paul would go so deep into new wave. Right?
He would maybe even get, what was his name? Tom Bailey to produce their record from the Thompson Twins.
Suddenly they would be just like, I want to get the Thompson Twins guy in to do our new record. I don't like the Thompson Twins. They're not disco enough.
And then, of course, somebody would probably say that I'm not going to play any of that F music.
Of course, because they were, then they would get canceled.
Right.
Then that would be it for the Beatles.
See, you're a natural at this game.
Yeah. Oh, why, thank you. I didn't even get to them going into, like, 80s. Like, they would dress like Steve Winwood did, or Phil Collins. Remember when those guys wore those loose pastel suits?
Yes, yes.
Like, you picture a Beatles album would be just called Loose Suits. The Beatles are back with their new album, produced by Bob Clearmountain, Loose Suits.
Loose Suits. It only makes it to number 79.
Yeah. And then they end up in the Queen slot in Live Aid.
Yes.
Because they need to do the comeback.
What if they blow it, though?
Well, yeah, what if they were terrible? They come out, they're just like under-rehearsed.
And they didn't have like a dynamic front guy.
They didn't.
A single focus point.
Yeah. They didn't. So he would come out. They'd come out. They'd be George. John would be like a little too confident. He'd be like, I think you all know this next one, and starts playing the wrong song or something, right? Or he wants to play like I Dig a Pony.
Yeah.
Like they're working up the set list. Paul's like, we got to start with Hey Jude. And then John's like, why don't we start with I Dig a Pony? And then like they eat it. At Live Aid in front of the world.
Real bad.
Then they, yeah, then what would they do?
The Kinks petered. Remember how the Kinks just kind of petered out at the end?
And started playing small. Like, suddenly, like, the Beatles would play, like, the Beatles, Three Nights at the Beacon Theater.
Tonight at the TLA in Philly.
Yeah, they're just playing, like, smaller places. Tonight at... Tonight at the bottom, the bottom end?
At the bottom of the hill in San Francisco?
No. What was the place in New York? Bottom line?
Yeah, bottom line, yeah.
Tonight at the bottom line, the Beatles.
Two shows.
Two shows, early show and a late show. Early show sold out. Tickets still at the door for the late show. And they just kind of, yeah, they kind of just fade out slowly. Then they would break up and then get back together and be like straight up nostalgia.
Right. Well, what if they came back and they did one of those Altamars parties?
Yeah, like they kind of curated one.
Yeah, and it was the worst attended one.
Yeah. I want to add a band to the lineup. They're called Shellac.
they're going to play at 4 a.m.
Ringo super into Ren and Ringo signs to Touch and Go. I'm working on a new album with the Digits.
Corey says he wants the Digits to back me.
I'm playing with Michael Gerard from Killdozer. So I did one. There you go.
I loved it. You're a champion at this. Oh, my God. And I hope this isn't a big ask, but I would love a favor right now.
What's that, Rodwin?
Would you let me have this opportunity to announce my new charity?
What is your new charity?
It's called the Ice Glove Challenge.
The Ice Glove Challenge. What is the Ice Glove Challenge?
Well, surely you remember the Ice Bucket Challenge, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, this is just like that, only instead of dumping a bucket of ice water over your head, you pick up a boiling giant hot steel mug full of bubbling lava, and you see how far you can carry it while wearing a giant glove made of 5-inch thick ice.
Mm-hmm.
And you get your friends to pledge $10 for every foot you walk before the ice disintegrates.
Okay.
And I nominate you, Tom Sharpling, to do the Ice Glove Challenge. What an honor, right?
Wait, I would wear a glove made of ice that's like, you said, 5 inches thick.
Super thick, yeah.
But
yeah.
I would also be carrying a mug filled with, you said, lava?
It's like a, steel was the wrong word. It's like a cauldron, but it's in the shape of a mug.
Okay,
and bubbling lava.
Well, this, I gotta just say, this sounds very dangerous. And how many people have done this to date?
You'd be the first. Why?
Well, it just sounds really, really risky.
But it's a really big honor.
Is it?
Yes, it is. It is for charity.
Uh-huh. I don't know about this. This sounds like a huge physical health risk here.
Look, you don't use that tone with me, you coin-operated weasel fart.
Wait, what did you just call me?
Oh, you heard me. I called you a coin-operated weasel fart.
Well, guess what, Broadwin? I'm not going to do your dumb challenge.
Yes, you are.
I'm not going to do it. And you're really driving me nuts, buddy.
Calm down, honey, please.
Wait, what? Please. What's going on there?
Oh, it's my 8-year-old daughter, Jaden Antoinette. Hang on. I'm going to take your head and bat it around like Mort Seagram at the 1984 Tetherball Olympics if you don't do this, okay?
Okay. No, I'm not doing it, Broadwin. I don't care what you say or how tough you talk.
Look, I will beat your ass. I really will.
Okay. I'd like to see you try.
Yeah, well, look in the mirror because it's the last time you're going to see your face that way.
Oh, okay. You're real.
For Daddy?
What?
Okay, just don't bite the dog, honey, please. Okay, I'll sing it. Daddy is a stupid head. He doesn't know mommy hates him because he makes less money than literally all of our neighbors. And his car SSD.
Oh,
are you going to do what he used or not, you filth pig?
Filth. I can't believe you just called me a filth pig.
Oh, I wasn't talking to you that time. I was talking to Jaden Antoinette. It was a rare moment of courage. Believe me, they don't come often.
You, what?
Oh, no.
What?
She's really mad, Tom. Oh, my God. Her eyes are glowing, and there's a veritable waterfall of drool coming from her mouth. It's sick. Remember when Dee Wallace sees the dog and says, "Cujo, you're rabid."
Uh-huh.
Well, welcome to literally every day over here at our house. It's crazy.
So you're just trapped? What are you, like a prisoner?
Basically, yes. It's sick and it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Equal parts sick and scary?
It's like 70 sick, 30 scary, but it varies. It goes back and forth a lot.
Sure.
It's exhausting.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Well, that's...
I can barely stay awake at this point. Oh, no, Jaden Antoinette, no! Oh, my God. Why on earth did I give my poorly behaved 8-year-old child a real whip for her birthday? Oh, no, Jaden Antoinette.
You all right there? Hello? Broadwin? Wow, that's a, geez. You clear that line, I guess. I guess he might be, that was upsetting. That was really upsetting. I didn't like that. Didn't like it.